And good morning. Coming up on 10 minutes before the hour, I'm Joe Corcoran for WKU Public Radio. Now, the overwhelming news story of the past week has, of course, been the tornadoes that decimated parts of Kentucky and Indiana last week. Here to try to make some sense of it, Dr. Josh Durkee, an assistant professor of meteorology at WKU. Dr. Durkee, first of all, thanks for coming in this morning to be with us. Boy, what a mind-blowing event last week. Everybody knows, of course, the damage the tornadoes did last week, and still very early, but maybe like jumping in the middle of the story, can any good come out of this as far as scientists studying how they came up?
That's a good question. What happens in an event like this is we reflect first on the forecast. And the forecast for this event was actually pretty spot on. The Storm Prediction Center handled this system very well by having a general outline of this risk area right on target with the area 3 days out. And leading up right up to the event, the forecast called for significant widespread tornado outbreak right across the region where it occurred.
Mm-hmm. Is that normal where you get that precise warning that much in advance?
It depends on the time of year. It depends on the type of event. With winter weather, that type of lead time becomes a lot more challenging because there are a lot more vulnerabilities to things in the atmosphere that could change something from snow to rain. With severe weather, it becomes a little bit more I hate to say the word straightforward because it's not straightforward, but it's a little bit more straightforward with that type of forecast.
Yeah. Now, one tornado that hit West Liberty in far eastern Kentucky that destroyed really the town there, it was on the ground for 60 continuous miles through four counties. That was on Friday. It was on the ground for about an hour, another on the ground for about 50 continuous miles. How unusual is that for them to stay on the ground for that long?
Well, those type of storms are called supercells, and the original name for the supercell thunderstorm comes from the fact that they typically last for very long durations. And as long as those types of thunderstorms keep moving into favorable environments, those environments are conducive toward maintaining longer life cycles. So overall, those type of thunderstorms are typical at those durations.
Yeah, because one thinks of tornadoes especially kind of hit and miss. Boy, you know, they form, they hit the ground and kind of bounce away or dissipate. But the everything that came together to form these cells was how unusual really is that?
Well, the thing about the way this event unfolded is that it actually was not terribly unusual. If it were, the forecast, in fact, would have been much more difficult and perhaps more inaccurate. But the fact is when there are certain ingredients in the atmosphere that come together and the right balance of those ingredients, you're going to get tornadoes. And if it's the perfect mixture, you're going to get an outbreak of tornadoes. And that's simply what happened in this event. It was just the right setup with the right combination of the variables in the atmosphere.
And here we are in the first week of March, and ironically, March is Severe Weather Awareness Month in Kentucky. Can we be expecting more severe weather throughout the end of this winter and into the spring?
With traditionally, according to climatology, we can certainly expect more severe weather. This event is not very typical with the timing and, of course, even the overall magnitude. Kentucky typically does not see these types of tornadoes overall. But in terms of climatology, our tornado season doesn't really get going until late March and through April.
Mm-hmm. So we're not out of the woods by any means yet with the
winter. We are certainly not out of the woods. That's not to say we're going to see more events like the one that just occurred. It's certainly possible, but in terms of just basic severe weather patterns, we are just now getting started.
Yeah, with the forecasting the way it is, as you mentioned, you're able to forecast maybe better and better earlier and earlier. But can you predict the severity of the storms, whether we're looking for an EF1 tornado here or an EF4 there? Can you get that specific?
You can. It's tricky to put hard numbers to something like that, but there are forecast parameters that do look at thunderstorm severity. And looking back on this forecast, there was this particular parameter that was calling for up to a 40 or 50% chance of EF2 tornadoes or greater across the region.
An EF2 tornado being what? What wind speed?
Oh, we're getting well over 100 miles an hour, 150 miles an hour.
EF5, of course, being the most damaging, and there were several EF4s, I know, out in the eastern part of the state. This is the question everybody always asks. Okay, we predict this, the storms, here they come. What can and should people do when they hear these forecasts, and especially the so-called cow's sirens at the last minute? What can people do to protect themselves?
That is a very interesting discussion that is ongoing in our field, because we feel like there are so many better technologies for getting warnings out. The Weather Service is doing an excellent job with getting the warnings out. The local media is doing an excellent job. But still, people are getting hurt, getting killed. And right now, the debate is going back and forth between waiting for something to happen and preparing for something to happen. And right now, I think what we're kind of at a plateau with our abilities to getting good warnings out. And now it's time for the public to start reacting earlier. So it doesn't come down to waiting for something important to happen. It comes down to preparing for something important to happen, having a plan ready, and acting on it when that something happens.
Mm-hmm. Through social media, Facebook and Twitter.
Certainly.
And phones and PDAs and everything. You said have a plan in ready and in effect. What kind of plan should we have?
A plan would be, if you're at work, what part of the building are you going to go to if a tornado were to come into that area? If you're at home, what part of the home do you expect to go to? Just like fire drills, a lot of families will have a practice fire drill in the event that something happens in the middle of the night, so you're ready to go. Families should have a tornado drill just as well. If something happens while everyone is spread out at school and at work or even at home in the middle of the night, there should be a plan for each of those scenarios.
Mm-hmm. A basement if you have one, or an interior room.
Certainly. The lowest level of the house is a good place, but more especially would be, because since a lot of people don't have basements, interior, and put as many walls between you and the outside of your home, and try to stay away from broken glass, mm-hmm, flying around windows and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, you as an academic in this field, what do you roll your sleeves and start going over the data now from these tornadoes and trying to glean whatever information you can out of it?
Yeah, from this perspective, it's difficult to get information about the actual tornadoes beyond looking at radar data and the overall large-scale circulation that the tornadoes developed within. But we don't really have the instrumentation out there measuring these things directly, so that's a bit of a challenge. So from my perspective, I look at it from more of a climate perspective, and looking at it from a forecast perspective, how well is all this handled, how well did we accommodate our expectation for an event like this, and so forth.
And as you said, the warnings were pretty good.
Yes, the warnings were very good.
Dr. Josh Durkee, thank you very much for coming in this morning to be with us. We appreciate it. And Morning Edition continues in just a second. Stay with us.